It's time for Midday Edition on KPBS. Today we're talking about the arts and culture scene here in San Diego. I'm Jade Hindman. Here's to conversations that keep you informed, inspired, and make you think. Best-selling crime author Don Winslow penned his last book. He joins the show to talk about his career and what's next.
It sounds a little smarmy, but I mean it sincerely, you know, that every good material thing I have in life, you know, I owe to readers.
Plus, we've got a preview of the Arab Film Festival and a few events happening this weekend. That's ahead on Midday Edition.
Hi, I'm Maya Tribulsi, news anchor for KPBS Evening Edition. At KPBS, we're storytellers, providing trusted, accurate news and information to our community. But not everyone realizes how important that is. And that's why we're asking you to tell that story during Public Media Giving Days. Share what inspires you on KPBS. Text, call, or post with hashtag Public Media Gives. And thanks.
Welcome in, San Diego. It's Jade Hindman. Author Don Winslow joins the show to talk about his last book and what's next. Plus, we'll preview San Diego's Arab Film Festival and check in on all the weekend happenings. This is Midday Edition, connecting our communities through conversation. Some big news for best-selling San Diego author Don Winslow. The final book in his last crime fiction drama trilogy, City in Ruins, is out now. Not only that, he's retiring from his novel writing career to focus on political activism. Don Winslow joins me now. Welcome back to Midday Edition, Don.
Thanks for having me.
So glad to have you here. So, okay, without giving anything away, what are readers in for with City in Ruins? What's going on in the life of Danny Ryan?
In the life of Danny Ryan, you know, Danny takes a big leap, and I hope the readers go with me on this. When we last left him, he was wandering around the deserts of Anza Borrego, as a matter of fact, after having had a love affair with a Hollywood actress. And when we meet him a few years later now, he is a billionaire casino mogul in Las Vegas.
Interesting. Very interesting. You've been working on this trilogy for 30 years. How does it feel to finally be done?
Kind of amazing, kind of bittersweet. You know, I've picked this book up and set it down so many times and had so many doubts about my ability to pull it off. And so to finally have it finished and then, you know, open that box and see the actual book, I have mixed feelings, to be honest with you. It was a thrill to see it and a lot of satisfaction to have finished the trilogy, but also knowing that it's the last time I'm going to open one of these boxes and see, you know, the book come out. It's a little bittersweet.
Yeah, it's been quite the journey. What's changed in your life since you introduced us all to Danny Ryan?
Boy, a lot. You know, we live half the year in Julian now and half the year in Rhode Island, where a lot of the books take place. My son got married. You know, it's funny. When I began this trilogy, my now adult and married son was a toddler, you know, running around the house and, you know, he and I killing Imperial Star Wars troopers and that kind of stuff. And, you know, now he's a married man. All of that's changed. I think when you come to the end of a career, of course, you get reflective and you think back. I think people look at my career now and, you know, immodestly, I mean, I'm kind of shocked. I've had 7 or 8 New York Times bestsellers and movie deals and all of that. And that's what they see. They don't see the years, you know, when I had $37 in the bank and publishers were, you know, saying, well, you're not a best-selling author, so we won't print a lot of books. But of course, if they don't print the books, you can't sell them, you know? Mm-hmm. And so you're stuck in that perfect catch-22. So yeah, I think I've been reflecting a lot on those years.
Man, you've gone through so much, overcome so much. I mean, will you miss Danny?
Yeah, I think I will. It's funny, Jade, you know, between a character named Art Keller, who was in these three sort of big drug books that I did, and Danny, I've spent more time with those two guys who don't really exist than any other real human being in my life, with the possible exception of my wife. So, yeah, I think I will miss Danny, you know, but I feel like I've known Danny my whole life. I grew up around the Dannys, you know, played hockey with them and surfed and went to bars and all that kind of thing. So, yeah, I'll miss him.
Well, they say save the best for last. So is City in Ruins the best one, Don?
I'd be the last person to make that judgment. You know, I think that's up to the reader. Listen, hopefully you get better as you go along, you know, and not worse. I feel pretty good about this book. I think that over the past few years, or the past few books rather, I've become more economical with my use of language. I try to make fewer words do more. Mm-hmm. And I think that's true. I think in some ways, Jade, I've become a more compassionate writer. Probably a bit more compassionate toward my characters in this book than maybe I was in earlier books. Whether it's my best or not, you know, I don't know. I'm not the one to make that judgment.
Well, I mean, speaking of making fewer words do more, I want to talk about your transition to political activism. You're already very active, but tell me why you're taking it full time.
You don't get to choose the times you live in, you know? And I think that this election coming up in November might be the most important election since 1860. I think our democracy is at stake. I think that there's a, I'm just going to speak frankly, a neo-fascist movement in this country led by a man who organized a coup against the government of the United States, tried to overthrow the government of the United States. And this man, this traitor, is now the Republican nominee for president. So that requires responses that are faster than you can give in a novel. You know, if I were to write a book about this, by the time I wrote it and it was published, the fight's over. And so, you know, it's urgent. And so that's why at this time.
Right. And you use social media to get to that urgency a lot, right?
Yeah, almost exclusively, you know. I mean, I occasionally write a column. I've been on television a lot the past few days giving this message. But yeah, we're on, you know, I guess it's now X, what used to be Twitter. And mm-hmm. my partner Shane Salerno and I, you know, in addition to the tweets or whatever they're called now, have done a number of videos that have, this is shocking to me, have received over 300 million views.
Wow.
15 million in the last three videos alone. And so, yeah, that's our effort to get the message out and fight this fight.
Yeah. How has your writing influenced your politics, or rather, how have your politics influenced your writing?
Boy, that's a long answer, I'm afraid. You know, I started out as your pretty basic crime writer, you know, thinking I would write private eye stories and all of that. And that has little to do with politics. But then back in, oh my God, 97 or 8, I started to write books about the drug situation. Crime novels, you know, but they were very close to reality. And so that required a lot of research. And the more I researched, the angrier I got, and the more political I got. And then the second book in that series, a book called The Cartel, was about an incredibly violent period in Mexico with the drug wars and how American policy affected that. And then I ended up taking out a full-page ad in the Washington Post advocating an end to the war on drugs, because I started to think, you know, if I don't try to do something just outside the realm of narrative fiction, I'm just another guy making money off dope.
Mm,
yeah. You know, what's the difference between me and the guy slinging on the street, except I was probably better paid.
Mm.
And then after that book, I swore I was not going to go back to that world. And I wrote a number of very, you know, apolitical books just for fun. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But then in 2015, with Trump running for president and saying slanderous lies about my friends and neighbors in the Mexican-American community, villainizing immigrant children, the opioid epidemic hit, and I felt that I could speak out politically in the books. I could get under the headlines, you know, and headlines always become stereotypes, don't they? But if I could show you the life of a immigrant child coming up on that train from Central America, if I could get you to spend some time, for instance, with a young woman addicted to heroin, you're going to look at those situations a little differently. And so I think I became more and more political. Aren't you glad you asked?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I hear you say that and I'm like, you're not done yet. There's still a lot more. There are many more stories to tell, but all right.
Yeah. But, you know, listen, I think there's been a confluence of two streams, if you will. One is the political stream that we've discussed. And the other is, look, you know, I'm not young. I think when you write books of that nature, to be perfectly honest with you, it takes something out of you. The research for those drug books was rough. And I think there's a time when you need to know to exit the stage gracefully and graciously, if you will, and let some other folks step into the light.
Hmm. Well, tell me more about San Diego's significance in your work. How has your proximity to the border influenced your writing?
Yeah, I almost can't estimate it, you know. Mm-hmm. I came out to California from the East Coast. I came out here as a private investigator and at a time when my writing career was not thriving. And I just fell in love with the place, you know, and still am. You know, I've driven the PCH, you know, for instance, in North County. I don't know how many times, Jade, 1,000? Yeah, probably. I'm still as excited doing it as I was the first time. And then the proximity to the border was, of course, a major influence on my career. I ended up spending 23 years on the drug beat, you know, because of its proximity. So I woke up one morning in the late 90s to read an article in the newspaper about 19 innocent men, women, and children being slaughtered in a little village not far across the border. And I wanted to find out how that could happen. And that launched this 23-year odyssey. So San Diego is huge, both as a subject of my work, as a location of my work, but also psychologically. I mean, it absolutely changed the way that I wrote.
And has living in Julian influenced your writing at all?
Yeah, I think so. You know, it's kind of darkly funny. I did one of the drug books was entitled The Power of the Dog, the first one. And critics were often wrote about the, quote, charred moral landscape. And it makes me chuckle a little bit because I finished that book after the big fires in Julian in 2002. I was helping to run the relief center in town. And so I was finishing that book while sitting on cartons of bottled water, looking out at nothing but an actual charred landscape, you know, for months. But, you know, certainly Julian and the quietude up there that it allows a writer. You know, I hike 4 to 6 miles most days when I'm there. And while I'm taking those walks, I'm usually refining dialogue or thinking about plot lines. And so, yeah, I think it's been a big influence.
Well, earlier you said it takes something out of you. What are the emotions around retiring from novel writing? I mean, has it really hit you yet?
No, I don't think it has. Because I don't feel retired yet, you know, between sort of the copy editing process of the book and the publishing process and now being out on tour and also being pretty busy with the political commentary, I don't really feel retired. It's starting to hit me a little bit, Jade, because, you know, I'm going around now evenings, I'm in bookstores or theaters and you know, with the reading public who are all kind of saying don't retire, or they're saying thank you and goodbye and all of that. So the reality of it is starting to hit me, I think, more and more every evening, you know. And, you know, I'm so grateful to those people It sounds a little smarmy, but I mean it sincerely, you know, that every good material thing I have in life, you know, I owe to readers. And so now I'm out both thanking them for that and also saying goodbye. So yeah, it's a little emotional, I have to admit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to leave our listeners with?
Just a thank you, you know, a really sincere thank you. I feel so grateful for this career that I've had, much bigger, much better than I ever dreamed. You know, and I want to thank a San Diego audience for being San Diego. It's such a great place to live and to be. And it has this, you know, I have this feeling, and I tell a lot of people this. And by the way, I'm an obnoxious San Diego tour guide when we have out of town visitors, man, I'm terrible. Like, I take them here and I take them there and I tell them what to order at certain restaurants and, you know, what time to be in certain places. I'm terrible. But, you know, it's such a wonderful place to live. You know, you can have breakfast in the desert, lunch in the mountains, and dinner at the beach with no problem at all. But I'm always telling out-of-towners that San Diego has this sort of unspoken ethic where it seems that most people just want people to be happy.
Yeah.
You know, which is pretty wonderful when you think about it.
I've been speaking with Don Winslow, best-selling San Diego author of more than 20 crime fiction novels. His latest and last is called City in Ruins. It's out now. Don, again, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me. Thanks for taking the time.
Still ahead, a preview of San Diego's 13th annual Arab Film Festival.
I liked very much that the film festival is a cultural representation of Arab life and artistic, and that mattered a lot to me.
You're listening to KPBS Midday Edition.
Hi, I'm Maya Tribulsi, news anchor for KPBS Evening Edition. At KPBS, we're storytellers, providing trusted, accurate news and information to our community. But not everyone realizes how important that is. And that's why we're asking you to tell that story during Public Media Giving Days. Share what inspires you on KPBS. Text, call, or post with hashtag Public Media Gives. And thanks.
Welcome back to KPBS Midday Edition. I'm Jade Hindman. San Diego's Arab Film Festival is back for its 13th annual event and ready to present 8 screenings, each showcasing one feature film and one short film from across the Arab world. KPBS reporter Jacob Ayer gives us a peek at what some of the films will be focused on this year. He asked festival organizer Bassima Darwish when and why she first got involved.
I joined at the beginning. I had moved back from Palestine. I'd lived there for a year teaching at the university. And a friend of mine, Anne-Marie Jasser, had made a film. They asked me to present it. That was my introduction. So I started out simply introducing a film for Anne-Marie Jasser. But I also needed to be involved in the Arab community in some way, in some form of activism. And I liked very much that the film festival is a cultural representation of Arab life and artistic, and that mattered a lot to me, to share that with the community here in San Diego.
Yeah, so if you've been with the festival since the beginning, this is the 13th San Diego Arab Film Festival. How have you seen it grow and maybe change over the years?
Well, we survived COVID. We made it through that with 1 year of online screenings. I think I would say that the films have changed over the years. A lot of the films tended to show the stark reality faced by the Arab world, by the communities in the Arab world, as a result of different events. And I feel like the artists, the filmmakers have striven more towards other representations of life. It seemed like in the beginning of the festival, we had a lot of complaints about how depressing the films were. And now I'm seeing a lot more of a mix filmmaking where the artists are exploring more creatively and just stepping out of telling the story of trauma and occupation.
So tell me a bit about this year's festival then. What can people kind of expect? What kind of films are screening?
Well, we're screening a lot of a variety. We're always striving for variety, but this year we are stepping more into representing Palestinian filmmaking because of what's happening in Gaza and in the West Bank and in Jerusalem. We're opening with a film called I'm from Palestine. And it's a very, it's a short, it's an animated short that presents the story of a little girl who struggles with identifying where she's from because she knows where she's from. And this is also my story, which is funny. She knows where she's from. She's growing up in the US, but when the teacher asks the kids to point to a map, her homeland isn't there. And Palestine is not there. And then her entire world goes into this state of doubt. But this year's festival has a lot more Palestinian films, telling Palestinian narratives, sharing the narratives of Palestinian life, and Palestinian filmmakers. We open with I Am From Palestine and A House in Jerusalem is our feature. And then we close with Lid, which is an entirely different kind of story.
So tell me a bit about, if you're comfortable, you said it mirrors your life in some ways. You're Palestinian then too?
Yes, I am. And from Jerusalem. And my parents were in Kuwait when I was born. We moved to the U.S. when I was three into the San Joaquin Valley. We were the only Arabs that we knew. I didn't speak English yet. My mom told me stories often about this beautiful place called Palestine. And that was what explained my name and our food and the smell in our home and the sound of the Quran on Fridays. So I would tell the kids, you know, my name is Basima. I would tell my friends that we were from this place called Palestine. And I loved this place because my mom told me stories about it and the oranges and the figs and my mom and dad's love story and writing love letters on oranges. And one day the kids came storming up to me, and this was probably in the third grade, and said that I was a liar and that there was no such place as Palestine. Then I went home, and I remember very clearly asking my mom. She met me out on the sidewalk, and I told her what happened. And I said, they said there's no such place as Palestine. I remember very well her expression and reflection and the pain and the tears behind her eyes as she said to me that I could say that I was born in Kuwait, but originally from Palestine. So that became where I was from for about 18 more years, born in Kuwait, but originally from Palestine. So anytime I had to explain my name or our grape leaves or our dishes, I was originally from Palestine, but born in Kuwait because Kuwait is on the map.
And then just giving the ongoing issues, Gaza, West Bank, that region, outside of just your own story and journey, do you think that this year's film festival is going to have kind of a larger significance because of ongoing issues in the region?
Well, I think that every year's festival has a tremendous amount of significance because of the ongoing trouble. This year's festival, I think, might draw more attention because people are growing more and more informed. And our choice to focus on Palestinian films is based on what's happening now in Palestine.
What do you think that the film festival itself here in San Diego can do during times of heightened conflict, like we're seeing particularly right now? Like, what's the end goal of having these film festivals?
I think that the film festival is important to share Arab identity with people. We tend to be, we've been marginalized as Arabs. And I feel like this festival brings, well, it does two things. One, it's really important to see yourself represented on screen, in society, as culturally relevant. And for me, as an Arab female, it's been a beautiful experience to both view the films on screen at the Museum of Photographic Arts and also to be part of making that happen. So I feel like there's that. And then there's also the community of people who maybe want to know more about Arabs than what they've seen from mainstream sources. And it's actually a very festive and fun night. And it's a a beautiful experience of sharing and exchanging. And we also offer Arabic food that is extremely popular.
And like you were saying, maybe in the early years, it was really focused on the harsh realities, but now trying to find, you know, the beauty within you know, the difficult realities.
Well, the beauty's always been there, and yes, and now we are seeing a lot more films that represent the beauty and the harshness. The people of the Arab world are so resilient, and they have experienced so much hardship. And meanwhile, as humans, and I think this is the greatest beauty of it, as humans, they continue to find love and pursue hope and dreams. And we share that at the festival.
And there's other cities in the U.S. that do have similar Arab film festivals. What's it like here being an Arab American or an immigrant to the U.S. in the San Diego community? Like, does this mean something specifically for the San Diego Arab community having this film festival?
We have a very large Palestinian community here in San Diego. And I'd say that most of the volunteers, we are 100% volunteer organization, both Karama and the film festival. None of our staff or crew are paid. We pay the filmmakers and for the venue. But we do have a very large Palestinian community, and I feel that it's really important that we are represented at the film festival, or by offering a film festival.
Is there anything else that you want to add that I haven't had a chance to ask yet?
So being part of the film festival has shown me that there are so many different ways to pursue activism for Arab life and identity. And being able to do that through art has been tremendously rewarding.
That was Arab Film Festival organizer Bassema Darwish. Jacob also sat down with Rami Yunus, co-director of the feature film LID.
So my name is Rami Yunus.
And you're a filmmaker.
To our purpose, I think I should be presented as a filmmaker.
Let's talk about the upcoming film at the San Diego Arab Film Festival. I believe it's called LID. Is that right? Mm-hmm. What can you tell me about it? What's it about?
So it's a science fiction documentary, which I co-directed with an American filmmaker, New York-based Sarah Friedland. We started working on this project back in 2016, and we wanted to tell the story of my hometown of Lid, which is a city that was occupied in 1948. It used to be the city that connected Palestine to the world because it had an international airport. Trains would depart from there to Lebanon, to Cairo, back when the borders were open. But then 1948 happened, the Israeli occupation. Massacres took place in the city. We call it the Nakba in Arabic, the catastrophe of the Palestinian people. So at the end of the day, we decided that, hey, let's do something crazy. And if we go down, we go down in flame. What if we do a science fiction documentary? Sarah and I are science fiction fans. So we decided to just like play with ideas that we had. And at some point we figured, okay, but what if 1948 never happened? How about that? How about maybe trying to create an alternate reality in which the atrocities never happened? And so, you know, in a way you could say that it is kind of Rick and Morty meets a Nakba film, which is, but less funny. Essentially, I would say that this film also serves in imagination as a basic human right. Yeah, and no one can take away your imagination. That's one thing that can be occupied, you know? And if you don't imagine, you're doomed to live the reality that was created in someone else's imagination.
You mentioned it multiple times. You're Palestinian yourself. You said you're originally from Lid?
Yeah.
And where are you living now? I mean, you're still in the heart of a lot of the ongoing conflict, no?
Yeah, so I'm what we call a Palestinian citizen of Israel. About 20% of Israel's population, people don't really know this, but 20% of Israel's population are Palestinian. We are direct descendants of people who survived 1948, or were not expelled in 1948 for whatever reason. So yeah, there are about 2 million of us. The film tells our story in a sense. It tells the, it exposes the root of I would say of the grave injustice we've been seeing.
You know, just being there and having this rollout in the US, like not all the films are actually being produced from the specific area where you're living that are filming that are showing at the San Diego Arab Film Festival. I think you have a very boots on the ground, you know, position in all of this.
LID is an international endeavor. My co-director is an American. I'm, like I said, a Palestinian citizen of Israel. Our executive producer is Mr. Roger Waters. And our other producer is Palestinian, Lebanese, British, Sousan Asfari. We are an international film, and we see the case for Palestine, as not necessarily just a Palestinian case, but a global human rights issue. Not a lot of films get made in here, especially about the issue of 1948. Essentially, we created an alternate reality in which Israel doesn't exist. There are Jews, Christians, and Muslims living in one place without the occupation. It's not a utopia, but it is also not an occupied, unjust place.
That was LID co-director Rami Yunus speaking with KPBS reporter Jacob Ayer about the San Diego Arab Film Festival. The festival is held at the Museum of Photographic Arts in Balboa Park from April 12th through the 21st. Tickets can be purchased online or at the door if they're not sold out. Coming up, a mother and daughter explore the life of an immigrant in a new picture book called Memory Garden.
Even though this is an Iranian grandmother with an Iranian-American little girl being her granddaughter, in the end, it is the garden that belongs to all immigrants.
Hear about that and more in the weekend preview. You're listening to KPBS Midday Edition.
Public radio programs attract educated consumers and business decision makers. You can reach this highly desirable audience with your company's marketing message on KPBS. Isn't it time to make our listeners your customers? Find out how by calling 619-594-5715 today.
Welcome back to KPBS Midday Edition. I'm your host, Jade Hindman. This weekend in the Arch, there's an interactive children's book launch, a classical piano superstar, a spring market, and much more. Joining me is KPBS Arts producer and editor, Julia Dixon Evans, with all the details. Julia, welcome.
Hey, Jade. Thanks for having me.
You know, it's always great to have you here. So let's start with the children's book by Zoray and Susie Garamani, called Memory Garden.
Yeah, so this is a gorgeous new picture book. And the story follows a grandmother and her granddaughter as they share a day in the garden. And it's a super simple premise, but of course, it's this opportunity for the grandmother, an immigrant, to share memories of her homeland and gardening in Iran. The narrator is the granddaughter, and her understanding of her grandmother's native country is really vague. And in that way, it kind of keeps the whole thing super relatable for anyone who has maybe an immigrant grandparent or who is an immigrant themselves. I thought that was really neat how they did that. But the story and the illustrations do give a lot of clues and vivid detail about Persian culture. It's really a lovely story.
Oh, that's great. And you had a chance to sit down with the creators of the book, a local mother-daughter author, illustrator duo. Is that correct?
Right. So both are actually really established already. You might remember Zoray Garamani's book, Sky of Red Poppies. It was the 2012 One Book, One San Diego selection. And the illustrator, Susie Garamani, she's famous for her boy-girl party creations. And she also designs the little commemorative pin for the San Diego book crawl. She's also illustrated tons of books herself, including the very essential Stack the Cats children's book. And you know, when you hear of a local mother-daughter collaboration on a book, you kind of imagine that they came up with this idea together, but that is not the case. The publisher connected them and didn't even know that they were related. So I started out by asking the two of them how that actually happened.
So my mom had sold her manuscript to this publisher, and there was no illustrator attached to it. I was desperate to illustrate it, actually. I really wanted to, but that's just not the process. So the publisher came back with a suggestion. The editor knew my work on another gardening-adjacent book called What Will Grow, and had sent my mom my portfolio and asked if I would be an acceptable illustrator for the project, completely not knowing that we're related. My sister, who also shares our last name, was representing my mom as agent and called me with happy tears. You know, I think the editor didn't know that necessarily that they were related either.
Oh, that's incredible. And Zare, what did it mean to you to have your daughter illustrate the book?
It meant and still does mean the world to me. I never thought I would write a picture book. For years, Susie had told me that she would love it if someday I wrote something that she could illustrate. And when I did it, Lily had already told me we can't pick Susie to be the illustrator as much as we both wanted to.
And Lily is your
Lily's my other daughter. Yes. And so to this day, it seems like a dream. Mm-hmm. I have to pinch myself to believe it.
And what was it like working on a story written by your mother and working with her, Susie? You've illustrated so many other projects. I'm wondering how this project felt different.
It felt different in every other way. I mean, I've never known any of the authors I worked with before. So part of it was sort of wanting to meet her expectations or her hopes for the book in the most positive way, not as a pressure. But the nature of the story makes it also deeply personal for me. So I sort of felt like I was going through this discovery process myself of how do I know my culture? Much like the protagonist in the book, I've never been to Iran. So I sort of thought about, well, what informs your knowledge of a culture when you haven't been to the country that it originates from? And I really had to dive deep and think really deeply about my own experiences. So it was very revealing to me about all the ways my mom and my dad have imbued culture in my life and have, you know, have made it part of my identity through my lived experience. So yeah, it was a really emotional experience in like all the positive ways and also the sort of deep ways, the deep ways that an experience can be meaningful to you. It never felt like work.
I want to talk a little more about the story. Zare, the two characters in this book are an immigrant grandmother and her granddaughter. And throughout the book, we follow them talking as they garden in the grandmother's backyard. Can you tell me what inspired this story?
In all of my writings, be it a novel or this time a picture book, I write from my heart when it comes to culture and emotions. But at the same time, my main goal as a writer is to bring in equality. So even though this is an Iranian grandmother with an Iranian-American little girl being her granddaughter, she talks about a Persian garden. But in the end, it is the garden that belongs to all immigrants. The relationship here is grandmother and granddaughter, but it can be any older immigrant with a new American child.
Susie, this book is so rich with visual details, both in the present Western garden and then also in the memories of the grandmother's childhood gardens. I'm wondering what was important to you as you illustrated this book?
The number one thing that I was really drawn into when I was making the images is just nature itself as being a really welcoming space. I'm a really big outdoorsy person. And while I don't have the green thumb that my mom does for a garden, I recognize how it in any culture can form sort of a sanctuary. And it becomes a peaceful space that you share with the people who matter to you. So that feeling of warmth in the outdoor environment was really important for me to communicate. And then the other thing, too, was I realized a lot of my cultural experiences were through the visuals, through things like textiles and the colors of things like food. I really wanted to make sure that those things that I feel intuitively about my culture were also present in the illustrations.
And Zare, there's a line in your author's note that I really love. It says, When you become an immigrant, a part of your past silently awaits the right moment to be passed on to the next generation. What do you mean by that?
I think a lot of immigrants shut down the voice within. Where you were born and raised will forever stay with you. It doesn't matter how many years each involves. I came here as a young woman in her early 20s, and I've lived in this country 50 years. But when I think deep down, that Persian-ness has stayed with me, and that's forever part of me. Therefore, putting that out is my legacy to my children and now my grandchildren. And this is what I tell a lot of adults and when I address them, even during the talks about the children's book. I tell them, within each one of you, there are stories that these kids need to know. Tell them. If you don't write, tape them. Make sure that the story doesn't die with us.
That was author Zohreh Gharamani and illustrator Susie Gharamani discussing their new picture book, Memory Garden. This Saturday at noon, they'll hold an interactive story time with art lessons, seed planting, and more at the downtown library. You're listening to KPBS Midday Edition. I'm Jade Hindman, here with KPBS arts producer Julia Dixon Evans. And we're discussing what's going on in the arts and culture scene this weekend. And there's a big concert at the Shell Friday night. Let's talk about piano player Lang Lang and what he's performing with the San Diego Symphony.
Yeah, so Lang Lang is like a classical music superstar, basically. He has such an incredible style and stage presence. And he recently released an album of music by the composer Saint-Saëns. And he will be playing a couple of Saint-Saëns pieces with the symphony. For one of them, he'll be joined by his wife, piano player Gina Alice Redlinger, and they will perform Carnival of the Animals, which is a lovely piece. This is a recording of them playing the Aquarium movement, one of the kind of more recognizable pieces. And the symphony will also play a piece by contemporary Dutch composer Joey Raukens. It's called 365, which is 365 measures long and kind of mimics the rhythm of the year. And this is all Friday night at the Shell.
Sounds like a lovely time. This weekend is the second Saturday of the month, which means it's Barrio Art Crawl. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so Barrio Art Crawl is a monthly self-guided art tour and festival. It's every second Saturday along Logan Avenue in Barrio Logan. It runs from noon to 8 p.m. and there's food, open studios and galleries. There's a ton of shops along the route and also music performances kind of peppered throughout the area. And one highlight this weekend is an exhibit by the artist Panka. It's at this small gallery inside Libellula Books. And I love Panka's art. She has these vivid, recognizable characters and kind of these street art aesthetics. And it's opening at the gallery during the art crawl. That's at one end of the crawl. And then also don't miss the Barrio Art Crawl Gallery, the newly opened official gallery space for the crawl. That's at 2113 Logan Avenue. And then if you head over a few more blocks to Bread and Salt, you can see all of the exhibits on view there. There's a closing reception at Best Practice, and then a chance, if you haven't yet, to check out Tara Arunsekul's really incredible interactive maze installation. That's at Athenaeum Art Center in Bread and Salt.
All right. And in North County, there's a new play opening at New Village Arts in Carlsbad. And so this is a spoof of an Alfred Hitchcock movie, right?
Right. It's called The 39 Steps, and it's directed by New Village Arts' own A.J. Knox, and it stars Dallas McLachlan and Erica Marie Weiss. And the story follows a man who is wrongfully accused of murder after a woman is found dead in his apartment. And the Hitchcock movie is this spy thriller. And then this spoof stage adaptation, this is by playwright Patrick Barlow. It leans into the kind of absurdity of the whole thing. There's a lot of comedy and a lot of physical humor. And the show's in previews right now. If you're looking for a lower cost option, the show's through Friday night or the preview pricing. And then opening night is Saturday, and this is at New Village Arts in Carlsbad, right in the heart of the village on State Street.
Lots to see there. And finally, the San Diego Made Spring Market takes place this weekend in the La Mesa Village. This is a huge pop-up market with local creatives, local musicians, and lots of great food. What's on your radar this year, Julia?
Well, first of all, this is the first year that it's going to be at the La Mesa Village, and it's also free this year. There's usually an entrance fee. So that is on my radar. And there are hundreds of booths. There's interactive community art installation, and there'll be performances from musicians, a bunch of locals, including a band that caught my attention at last year's spring market. It's the Fernandez. They're two teenage sisters who are super talented. And yeah, the whole market is from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. along La Mesa Boulevard, right between Spring Street and 4th Street.
All right. You can find details on these and more arts events and sign up for your weekly KPBS Arts newsletter at kpbs.org/arts. I've been speaking with KPBS Arts producer and editor Julia Dixon Evans. Julia, as always, thanks.
Of course. It's great to be here.
That's our show for today. If you missed it, you can always download the Midday Edition podcast wherever you listen. Don't forget to watch Evening Edition tonight at 5 for in-depth coverage of San Diego issues. The Roundtable is here tomorrow at noon, but before we go, I'd like to thank our Midday Edition team. Producers Juliana Domingo, Andrew Bracken, Brooke Ruth, and Ashley Rush. Art segment contributors Julia Dixon Evans and Jacob Ayer. Technical producers Rebecca Chacon, Ben Redlosk, and Brandon Trufa. The Midday Edition theme music you hear is from San Diego's own The Surefire Soul Ensemble. I'm your host, Jade Hindman. I'll see you back here Monday. Until then, have a great day on purpose.
Hi, I'm Maya Tribulsi, news anchor for KPBS Evening Edition. At KPBS, we're storytellers, providing trusted, accurate news and information to our community. But not everyone realizes how important that is. And that's why we're asking you to tell that story during Public Media Giving Days. Share what inspires you on KPBS. Text, call, or post with hashtag Public Media Gives. And thanks.